I'm John Batchelor with my colleague Michael Vlahos of Johns Hopkins, discussing a question that Michael and I do not have the answer for yet, and we pursue it. Are we now in a civil war? For some years, Michael and I learn, we have discussed this as men who observed from the outside the turmoil of the American political scene and also the adversaries of America in the world. However, most recently, Michael and I have settled into dual persona. One part of us is John and Michael in the 21st century. Those are our Christian names. But an earlier part is Caius and Germanicus. We are equestrian class. We're not senators. We live in Londinium. We're in a wine shop near the Thames River. And we're idle because we have work done for us. And we're speculating in the year 90 AD under the Emperor Domitian, who's semi-divine. We're speculating, where did the Republic go? We grew up thinking the Republic was shoved aside by the Emperor cult, starting with Augustus and all the Tiberius and all the emperors in between. But it interests us to speculate about what happened during the Roman Civil Wars, which stretched over the balance of a century, really the first century BCE. You know it best as Caesar, but there are other players involved in the exit of the Republic, which was a mix of the senatorial class, the optimates, and the plebs, the populares, the people and the rich people. However, that isn't the whole explanation, so I welcome Michael tonight to recount how we got to here. We think this is an important moment to observe our republic, the turmoil in our republic, the red and the blue, the urban and the rural. The last election identified these two strains very clearly. The challenge here is to decide if this republic of ours is in trouble or going through a refreshing period or reconsidering its role in the world or failing. We don't know, but if this is a civil war, and we're not sure, salient to the fact that you cannot be sure you're in a civil war when you're in it. The Romans didn't know. They thought it was just dealing with triumvirates or big men or Caesar. They didn't know it was a civil war that would transform into the Roman Empire. We don't know, but we will begin by recounting how we got here with three questions, and I will put the first question to Germanicus, my philosophical colleague. Germanicus, a very good evening to you. The trouble we have is, are we failing? Are we failing as a republic in the 21st century? And the reflection allows us to look at how the Roman Republic failed in the first century BCE in the civil wars. Why is the first question? Why did it fail? What happened? Is it the big men? Is it famine? Is it the fact that the Parthians defeated Crassus? I mean, is it the dictator Sulla who decided to retire after consolidating power? Is it the memory of the Marius brothers? Was it poor auguries at the gates of Rome? Is there one reason? Good evening to you, Germanicus.
Good evening, guys. This is a question that has enthralled American thinkers going back to the education of Henry Adams, where he, more than a century ago, is bemoaning the state of the American Republic and comparing it to Rome at the time of Marius and Sulla. And for at least a century and a half, maybe two centuries, both British Enlightenment society and then our own young republic have debated and fretted over why the Roman Republic failed. And it seems to me, after having not only widely researched and not only read all the most recent literature, but having taken courses on Roman imperialism and the failure of the Republic way back half a century ago at Yale, I can say that Rome as a republic depended on modesty. In other words, the secret of its success was its integrity and the fact that the people, meaning the citizens of the Republic, felt bound to each other and that was its integrity. And that integrity depended on modesty. And modesty went by the board when Rome started conquering places far, far away, you know, beginning with its expeditions to Africa, its two-century war in Hispania, then in Gaul, then in Greece, finally ending up in Syria and Egypt. And the fact is that because Rome became too big, and because Rome lost its sense of connection between the people, the citizens, and the leaders, it basically split apart. And it was fine as long as the citizens were together. And, you know, the citizens were metaphorically together on the ceremonial battlefield, because all of the citizens fought, the rich and the poor together, shield to shield. And that began to end. And the citizens of Rome, the regular farmers, the agricolae, began to get ground down with these foreign wars because they couldn't be at home farming. Their farms fell into disuse, and the men who led them were buying up their land, and they became impoverished. And as a result, these men in distress, who were really the bulwark of the Roman Republic, had to turn to the big men to keep them going. They became dependents on the big men, and the big men then became the leaders, and they began to vie for all the honors of the Republic, and they began to fight with each other and to be the shakers and movers of the Republic itself, and they had become fabulously wealthy in all of these foreign wars, so that the move toward empire itself was deeply corrupting. And yet, of course, it wasn't an empire because an empire depends on having the leader as the person of the emperor. And so here was a paradoxical position where it was an empire without an emperor, and that situation could not be sustained. Instead, there were four or five big men, maybe a few more than four or five, and they were all in competition. They all had their followers of dependent citizens who were their fighters in foreign wars, and who were now penniless and completely at the beck and call of these big men, and they started fighting it out. And the fighting out, if you will, took almost a century until it was finally resolved.
What you're describing is something that is not alien to our present circumstance, Michael. If you look at when did the U.S. start fighting foreign wars, you'd have to date it somewhere around the turn of the century, I suppose, with the Spanish-American War, the conquest of Cuba and the Philippines, and then a transformation completely with Wilson and the Great War. The Great War Part II, we call World War II, which we've discussed in the past, Redeemer Nation, but our success led us to larger and larger conflict zones, the Cold War, Vietnam, Korea in between. And that, Michael, is not dissimilar to what Rome itself went through when it conquered the immediate Italy around it in the peninsula, and then spanned it into Gaul, you said, into Africa, into Spain, into far Spain. The more they conquered, the richer they got, and the alienation set in between the Senate and the army and the people.
Exactly. And this is what America experienced in the 20th century. And those wars, which were tiny at first, like the Spanish-American War, you know, putting down the Philippine Rebellion and the Cuban Insurrection, all of those cute little things, launching ourselves deep into Mexico, chasing Pancho Villa, all of that morphed suddenly into a transformation in World War One. And yet World War One was a very short episode. It was earth-shattering in terms of America's place in the world, but it was over, or seemed to be over. And then, remorselessly, it all came back. And by World War II, We were deep into it, and then we never looked back. We've been fighting wars almost without interruption since 1941.
Let's hear some definitions. Who were the optimates for the Romans, and do they have an analogy here in the 21st century?
Well, the optimates were the elite in Rome, and they were a kind of an aristocracy, although it's not hard and fast. They weren't exactly aristocrats in the medieval sense, or like France before the Revolution. But they were definitely the upper class. And yet, the thing that I mentioned earlier that kept the relationship stable, or what you might call an equipoise, a kind of a balance, with the populares, who were the regular people, was the fact that they served together on the battlefield. As long as that was the case, mm-hmm. And as long as there was a balance in terms of the constitutional processes of the Republic itself, in which everybody gathered together and the 39 tribes of Rome would vote, and there was, in a sense, total participation, and that kept things stable as well. But when that participation became fake and was replaced by inside dealing among the aristocrats, the relationship between the two soured badly, and you had essentially revolts by the populares, which were seen in the two tribunates of the Gracchi brothers, who were both killed by the optimates. And then you began to get the rise of the big men, who on one hand were the saviors of the populares, but on the other hand, they were the bluest of blue blood optimates. And so you began to have a transformation from a kind of aristocratic popular society in balance, where none of the aristocrats were really that big, and they were all, you know, together with the populares in terms of what their enterprises together, Rome's enterprise. All that changed to the point where you had, you know, singular and identifiable big men who were able to be the make-weights, the heavyweights of government and politics, much like you have today with, you know, the billionaire who aren't optimates. They're way above that, who [S2] Right. [S1] Are really like dukes in many ways.
Let's turn to the question that is filled with irony. Did those who aimed to save the Republic become those who destroyed the Republic? This is a Roman Republic. And Caius, myself, and Germanicus, this is our dual role, we're reflecting because the Republic's gone. We live in an empire and we like it. It's stable. We're doing very well, thank you very much. Domitian is semi-divine. He won't last much longer, but there'll be other emperors after him. And to be a Roman citizen is a great joy, especially here far away from Rome, where we don't suffer the risk of backstabbing and blame shifting. So when we come back, Caius and Germanicus will speculate about who can save the Republic that will become the handmaiden of the end of the Republic. I'm John Batchelor with Michael Vlahos.